All right, welcome race fans to the Weekly Overtake. This is episode 4. We're coming at you live after the Formula One China GP and the MotoGP race in Circuit of the Americas. The race just ended for us. We're coming at you literally minutes after the podium finish, and we definitely have to start with MotoGP. And the few words that I have to say is, that's why you watch MotoGP. What'd you think, Taylor?
Definitely one of the best races I've seen in a while. Not necessarily for the fact of how close the racing was. I mean, we saw a little bit of that, but just the emotion, I think, all three riders that got on the podium, man, they earned it. So that was awesome. I was one of the first races in a while that I've yelled at the TV. And I'm not even that big of a Rossi fan. Like, I'm not really a fanboy. But, man, I was pumped. I was cheering him on. But fair play to Rins, man. He, really awesome to see Suzuki get the first win. Really awesome to see Rins get his first win. So yeah, great race.
So we can get into the action, but off the start, right? Like, so let's rewind maybe 12 hours, 24 hours. Yesterday we're here, we're talking. And we're literally joking about how far the margin will be for Mark Marquez, right? We're like, oh, you know, and I said yesterday, depending on how much he celebrates, right, it'll be an 8 second or a 10 second win, you know, and he did do well initially off the start. I think we were the lap. Again, we're coming at you hot right after the race. So not a lot of analytics going to happen right here, but I think it was maybe lap 5 or 6 where he went down to turn 12. He had a 3.5 second lead over Rossi, and it all seemed well, you know, in Marquez land. And then all of a sudden he went down, and I felt horrible. Like, when he went down, I was like, man, you're supposed to win here. Like, you have to take this race. This is your race. This is your home. But I think the rest of the field behind him, they perked their ears up and they just turned it on. And I think we had a more exciting race because of that. And everyone just really pushed for the podium. So.
For sure, a more exciting race. I mean, my God. I think everybody but Marquez fans was cheering Marquez crash. You know, it's the same old story. I mean, no, really, who really wants to see that? But, yeah, not only that, but, man, that was just embarrassing. The way he was trying to get that bike up and get the bike started, I was like, what? What was
he literally that? Fell on his back, you know, with the marshals there trying to help him. And,
yeah.
And that, you could tell by the time they actually stood it up on its own two wheels and – it was done. There was no way he was going to hop back on and make a run at it. Like, it mean, he just went down. It was turn 12 that claimed him and Lorenzo later in the race, which yet to be seen. It was a chain issue. Was that – who knows? But Honda did not have a good weekend in Austin, Texas this week. Cal Crutchlow went down. Lorenzo out. Marquez out. I mean, if you look – the best Honda finish was Taka Nakagami and the LCR Honda for in 10th place.
Yeah,
I mean, above him, Suzuki's, Yamaha's, Ducati's, and a KTM of Paul Espargaró in 8th. So, not a good weekend for Honda at COTA at all.
No. No, it wasn't. But saw some really important championship points were saved by Davi. He actually, within the first lap, he made up, what, 6 or 7 places.
13th to 6th or 7th, I believe, right on the start in the first 6 quarters. So...
yeah, so that was obviously important. He goes into we're going to Jerez. Jerez. He's still leading. Actually, the 9 points separate the top 4 riders. So that's really exciting. I mean, Jerez is, you know, it's going to be, I'm going to say, anybody's race. All right, you're going to have Miller, who's showing a lot of pace on the Ducati. He's going to have, you know, a lot of confidence. Obviously, Rossi's going to have a lot of confidence. So, you know, this is exactly what needed to happen from a fan's perspective for the championship. So I'm happy with it. So, yeah. And poor Cal, I mean, he was fast and I think he would have been easily fighting for a second.
Yep. That's 2 in a row for him though. He would have been fighting last week as well. And I mean, yeah. The false start, or which we had the illegal start this week too, two of them for Vinales and Johan Mir, both flagged there at the beginning. They showed the replays during the race with the HD cameras, and it was I won't say blatant, but under slow-mo, it was absolutely the right call.
Yeah.
And Vinales was fuming. He was doing his tear-offs in the pit lane, throwing him at the ground. He was not in a good way going through there, but yeah. Maybe he, I don't know if he would have fought to be up there as well, but you know, it's unfortunate, but hey, rules is rules, right? As they say, so.
Yeah. And I don't know really what's like, I guess they've just kind of started scrutinizing this more. Like, I don't know if they, what they've changed in their process, but it seems like before this, unless it was completely blatant, like from the naked eye, obvious, it didn't seem like we really got into the HD slow-mo stuff on these starts. So, honestly, I think ride through is way too harsh for a jump start. I mean, I can see a long lap, which, you know, Vinales.
Yeah, I agree. And Vinales took some long laps there during the race, and he was like doing a 208 and a 210, and then he took the ride through on top of that.
There was definitely some confusion there. But yeah, so I mean, honestly, kind of the MotoGP stewards need to kind of, or not stewards, but technical right. directors or whoever it is, they need to kind of work that out, because clearly there's some confusion on the riders' parts. I mean, we saw Fanati do that as well. The first race took a long lap when he didn't need to. And so anyways, but yeah, overall, awesome race. Just that it's just going into the next race that much more excited. So yeah, if you haven't caught a replay of that, do that.
Yeah, it's worth your time. Absolutely. I mean, for a second there, we saw Rossi clean and clear right in first place and for a number of laps, and Rins smoothly, I will say, chasing behind the Suzuki bike this year. I remember bringing up, they caught my eye earlier in the season, and it just seems like they have it dialed in to where, you know, that bike isn't so violent or rough on the tires, so where they can really manage a good race pace consistently throughout without having to push early. I don't know if Rossi was pushing too hard to keep pace with Marquez early on in the race, because he was hanging in there for a little bit for a few laps, and then he kind of let him go, and you know, he took his time looking back to see what's in his rear view as opposed to trying to chase the guy ahead. You know, he couldn't make his move early. Marquez got a clean start, really clean start for him and Miller, or excuse me, Marquez, Crutchlow, clean starts, and then Rossi repped the middle, and thankfully all was good on the first lap. Not a lot of drama there, so no. Everybody stayed clean.
Yeah, no, I definitely comes down to, you know, I mean, Rossi is, that was just sheer talent, doing what he was able to do on the bike. It's not because of the bike, I don't think, and the high abrasion of Koda coupled with Yamaha's lack of ability to put the power down means, yeah, there's a lot of spinning going on, and with a lot of spinning, you're going to lose the tires. So
we'll talk about that in F1 in a little bit, but
yeah, anyway. Yeah. So, you know, obviously it was just a matter of time. I think regardless, Rins was going to come up on Rossi either way, whether Marquez was in front or not. So,
so let's just pick out a couple guys here. So, Fabio Quartararo, right? Rookie. Bagnaia. These guys, seventh for Quartararo. Bagnaia finishing ninth. And then Miller, I just watching the podium after the race, seeing all three riders, obviously Rins was over the moon. You know, the Suzuki team was so happy. It's their first win since 2016 with Vinales at the British Grand Prix. And then Rossi, who I thought would maybe be a little bit, you know, just unhappy. Not unhappy, but just, you know.
Well, you could tell he was
not bummed. What he wanted, right? He wanted to win.
Of course.
Right?
He had it. But, I mean, he could taste it. It was right there.
Yeah. But he was genuinely, like, the way he embraced Rins and, like, they slapped it. Like, it just – I just love Valentino. And the way he's labeled the GOAT, it's for a reason. It's not just his capability on the track. Like, he – is just world class on and off the circuit. He really just loves the sport. He appreciates everybody. If you do well, and he did. Rins, the pass on Rossi was not aggressive. It wasn't anything. It was smooth. Like, it wasn't – there was no really contention. Rossi did a big dive there at the end of trying to get through, but really it's all hopeless after that. Like, there was not much he could do to make that gap up. So, but him and then Miller. Miller was over the moon, and the Ducati Pramac team, the privateer, up there on the podium. So, it was a really fun race and super exciting at the end. I'm really happy for all three guys that made it on the podium. So, and again, yeah, it shook up the points, like you were saying before. 9 points within the top four riders. This is obviously far from over. We're in the third race of the season, but yeah, it kind of kept from Marquez running away with it. And I'm sure he is kicking himself right now, and they're not happy in that garage.
So. Oh, for sure. For sure. But you know what? It's been said that, you know, this year Marquez has not crashed like he has in years past. I mean, he has definitely taken this shoulder injury to heart, and he knows that he can't be as reckless as he has been in the past, and he can't just crash and find the limit. You know, it was kind of inevitable. I mean, you know, it happens. I mean, top level of motorsports. I mean, yeah, stuff's going to go wrong. So it just, like I said, happened during the race, which, you know, it's just strange because Marquez crashed and it didn't look like he was really pushing the front. I mean, you know, it didn't seem like he was asking too much of the front tire, but, you know, sometimes it just happens like that. But
yeah, it is what it is, and it's in the books. So yeah. Alex Rins' first GP victory at the MotoGP level. I think he also said he was the first rider to win in all classes at COTA. So I think that's the current class is the 250, 600, and leader bike at the GP level. So that's pretty neat too.
Yep. All right. Well, let's switch gears to F1.
Yep. Let's talk about China. So Mercedes front row, Ferrari second row, and that's most of the story. We had some Red Bulls involved, but that was Max Verstappen. So Bottas on pole, Hamilton in second, Vettel in third. Right off the start, Hamilton got a great start, excellent start, and just, I guess, some like quick trivia or, you know, just some extra information for you. So there's no – we have the energy recovery systems in the F1 cars, right? They can use battery power coming out of the corners. None of that is enabled on the race start. The race start is pure, you know, engine, clutch, driver, gas pedal. That's it. Like, there's no boost, none of that stuff that they can use. So it's all literally skill, talent, driver, feathering the clutch, knowing when to release and grab. Lots of other drivers you saw, if you watched the race replay or if you tuned in, you'll see lots of, like, you know, tire slip and spinning of the tires. Hamilton was just had a pure, perfect start. Won the race to the first turn and never looked back. I mean, he was out there in clean air. Bottas, his teammate, right behind him, you know, propping him up. Ferrari in third and fourth. I mean, I really felt bad for them. They didn't seem to have the pace throughout the practices, through the qualifying. They knew they were behind the Mercedes team, and they didn't, to me, in my eyes, they did not deliver today. There was a lot of confusion as to who was fastest. Of course, you're going to have that with teammates. I'm faster, let me through, so on and so forth. They let Leclerc let Vettel pass, and he couldn't produce anything. I spoke to it yesterday where I think Vettel was already kind of beat mentally. I don't think that was as much of a factor today, but they just couldn't produce. Vettel was, you know, locking up into corners where he shouldn't have been and not making the pace that he needed to. Leclerc, in my eyes, he got screwed early on in the race, and then later on, he did an excellent job towards the end fighting off Valtteri, where he was stuck in second place after the series of pit stops and the strategy had played out. He had it one or two laps. It was one full lap, at least, where the Mercedes right behind him, and he did a excellent job defending on the hard tire, the slowest compound against Bottas, who's on a fresh set of medium tires, trying to get ahead of him in order to allow Sebastian, his teammate, to catch up from fourth to third and bridge that gap, which they weren't able to do eventually. But yeah, I mean, lots of confusion for Ferrari. Do we let this guy go past? You know, they were switching back and forth. Didn't know what to do. To me, today was a pure two-stop. You didn't see a lot of people run the soft tires, but I would have liked to seen a medium stint, a long, hard stint, and then a short, medium stint at the end. Obviously, hindsight's 20/20. So my biggest disappointment of the day is the Ferrari team not bringing the fight, and they actually got cut off and undercut by Max Verstappen, who, you know, could have had almost a podium, but he definitely held off Leclerc very well. I mean, what'd you see, Taylor?
Yeah, I thought the kind of the story of that race was Ferrari's team strategy and getting it. What I saw was kind of executing that incorrectly. I get that Ferrari or that F1 is more of a team sport than GP, but it's just not. I typically it's just like, hey, let them race, you know. Let's not introduce any sort of kind of false result into it by, you know, managing the drivers and say who can be number one, who can be number two. It's just, to me, it ends up being wrong. I mean, it didn't seem like Leclerc had, you know, would have had the pace anyways to.
There was no genuine. It was a tenth here, a tenth there. There was no genuine. I am faster, flat out. Let me go, because if they saw that, the team would let it go. I agree. There was no, you know, cut and clear. This guy's faster. You know, let's send it. But either way, I think they're not going to catch that Mercedes car. Period.
Yeah.
So you like to me, you're fighting for third and fourth. They should have locked up third and fourth. I think halfway through the race, you realize that, and you shift your strategy to fend off the Red Bull, who undercut you towards the end of the race. Max pitted early. He got those fresh tires. He came out ahead of Leclerc, who was fighting off Bottas. You know, like they were, I think they were two eyes front when they should have been maybe just settling and handling their points, you know, and just taking those points and moving on, because that car is not where it needs to be.
It's so not. We saw Mercedes pull off a beautiful stacked pit stop.
Yeah, when they talk about the driver of the day and then vote for your the best action we saw all weekend was that pit. That was insane. So late in the race, Mercedes originally started on the medium tire. They ran 20 and change laps. They put on the hard. And then towards the end, you saw the Verstappen led the charge coming in and grabbing a new medium tire. Ferrari came in and grabbed a medium tire to cut him off, and that tire is legitimately about a second faster per lap. So you're looking at, you know, 18 laps to go. That could be an 18-second gap. Then Mercedes and Bottas, or Hamilton and Bottas, are out front pretty comfortably. But, you know, with fresher tires and the cars behind and they're hard charging, you need to come in and cover off, you know, that undercut to make sure that you're safe. So they basically – it was a ballsy move, daringly, both on the same lap. Hamilton first, Bottas right behind. 3.2 seconds for Hamilton, Bottas 3.0 second pit stop. Bottas never had to slow down. It was in and out. Like, that should be on ESPN's top 10, that, you know, like that. That to me, it's just the fact that the drivers are that good, the car is that good, Toto Wolff, the team is that good, and the pit crew, like, it's just masterclass, as they say. Like, it's just so hard to compete with somebody who's performing at that level on all levels, but from engineers to drivers to the guy, you know, handling the tire and the pit crew. They're just on top of everything right now. It's insane.
Agreed. And it almost took people by surprise, because it, at least the announcers, it's almost like that wasn't even an option. Like, it's whoever is in front gets the first one. That's just how it goes. And then so to see them kind of buck that and kind of, you know, hit it on the same lap and pull it off successfully, it was like, well, wow, why didn't, you know, it seemed like Ferrari could have benefited from that kind of strategy as well.
Yeah, they went all in without anybody calling. Like, they were just like, all right, we're going to go all in and cover it off. They were just basically trying to lock up the race at that point. So if they knew that if they can get both drivers back out on medium tires with the pace that they already have shown, and, you know, a good I think the gap towards the end was really only a few seconds, but Vettel had no chance of catching up to Bottas. Even Leclerc, towards the end, he came out with an 11-second gap to Verstappen, and they were thinking, okay, you know, 15 laps to go, 11-second gap, that's just under a second per lap, and he was fighting and pushing. He chimed in about a gearbox issue that apparently didn't exist, according to the Ferrari team. You know, they called back and said, everything's fine, go ahead and push. But at that point, Leclerc had basically been sacrificed initially in the race with having to let Vettel pass twice. Twice during the race, he let Vettel pass him. And, you know, just a regular on the straights, like, here you go. See what you can do. And then he spent his time fighting off Bottas for Vettel again. And I'm not, you know, just trying to destroy Vettel in this, but I think we need more from Ferrari, period. And I have a little theory on maybe as to why they were so slow. I don't know if it'll bear fruit, but last race in Bahrain, we saw Leclerc lose first place, ended up P3 because of a cylinder issue with the ECU, the engine control unit. So basically, between the last race and this race, they had a software update that they pushed to all Ferrari cars. So both the Ferraris took it, the Haas team, both cars powered by Ferrari engines, they took the update, and then the Alfa Romeo team decided to not take the update. And we had Antonio Giovinazzi had an issue in Q1, which was the same issue that Leclerc had. And if you look at Raikkonen, he had a pretty good finish. Raikkonen finished ninth in the race. And, I mean, that seemed like, to me, the only car that was a Ferrari-powered car that was actually going the way it was meant to go. So there's no, it's hard for me as a fan and looking on the outside to see the drop off in pace that was so extreme between the Bahrain insane pace of Ferrari to now in China at Shanghai, where it's a similar circuit, not the same, but still you got two long straights, lots of corners. But I mean, maybe that's has something to do with it. You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fair assessment. It kind of turned out pretty pedestrian or pretty predictable, I guess. It was just kind of stacked up the way that, you know, we assumed it was going to be with Mercedes. Again, another 1-2 from them with Ferrari behind. And so, yeah, I agree. So speaking of Ferrari, I want to get into a couple of questions that one of our listeners sent us. And so there's a few of them here. There's like three. So we'll kind of go one by one. But first one has to do with, oh, and shout out to Change, by the way. Thanks for the questions. So the first question is related to Ferrari. We saw Mick Schumacher, the son of the great Michael Schumacher, yep, do some testing in the Formula One car and did really well. So do you see Mick Schumacher ending up in a Ferrari, and how soon do you see him doing that? And if you do, how soon?
So I actually read some articles this week talking about the interviews with Mick Schumacher, and he's pretty set on being a complete driver. I think he knows that his name precedes him. I think he understands the inherent expectations, being that, you know, he has the last name Schumacher, you know, arguably one of the greatest of all time, probably the greatest of all time, at least in recent memory, you know, absolutely. So he is in F2 now. It's his first season in F2. He's not, you know, he's not like been there, done that, you know, so he's still growing very much so as a driver. I think the target for him in the F1 car on the grid during a season would be 2021. Like next season at the earliest, but preferably 2021. The sport's going to change. It's going to evolve. There's lots of almost Brexit-style talk over the rule changes that are coming to F1. That will be implemented in 2021. It's already been decided by the FIA and the owner of the series. So we'll see what's to come. But I think for him to be introduced in that next generation will give him a better, you know, playing field and a better advantage. And also, it's, you look at Alexander Albon, right, today. So he finished 10th in the Toro Rosso, the Honda Toro Rosso. So that's a secondary team for the Red Bull Racing team. Toro Rosso is basically Red Bull in Italian. So he had a huge crash in FP3, did not get to qualify, but still he finished in 10th place. That car shows excellent pace. Albon today, post-race, they said he won driver of the day today in the Chinese GP. They asked him, you know, what do you think? You know, how are you so comfortable? You had less seat time than anybody else. You know, of all the rookies on the field, you're almost at a disadvantage, but you're still performing so well. Is it the car? Is it you? What's going on? And he attributed most of his success today to F2, his time that he spent in the Formula 2 series learning and understanding the same tires. They're all in Pirellis in F2. They're in Pirellis in F1. Understanding tire management, understanding the circuits. They share, I think, like 70% of the same tracks that they race on. So, I mean, let Mick Schumacher do his thing. Let him grow. Let him become the champion that he one day may be. But I wouldn't want to force him into F1. And I don't think anybody, I mean, if a 24-year-old Schumacher is racing versus a 21-year-old Schumacher, I mean, that doesn't bother anybody. You know, we just want to see good racing. So if he's in the Ferrari program, he's already has a leg up. You know, he's going to be in a great development team with engineers and, you know, and coaches that will push him to be the best that he absolutely can. And like you see with Marc Marquez and Alex Marquez, sometimes that racing is just in your DNA. And no doubt he could be one day an F1 champion. So I think 2021, that's my target for him. Spend some time in Formula 2. Don't rush the process. Let it work for you. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it'll be a definitely a positive for Formula One. You know, right now with him being in F2, I just don't think he generates the headlines that, you know, naturally, I mean, it just the lower classes don't, you know, they don't have the following or the fan base or whatever. But I think he would definitely add value to the sport. I think he would naturally be a very popular fan choice just by the name. So I'm sure it's in F1's the owner's best interest that he does move up. Like you said, I think he needs time to develop but I think he'll be there. Now the question will be let's say 2021 is the target date. Whose seat is more likely up for grabs? Vettel's or Leclerc's? I think that's Vettel's.
Yeah, if you're gonna put those two in front of me, I think between Vettel and Leclerc. Yeah, not to say Vettel's on his way out. Of course, it's early this year. He's top class, but like we saw, Kimi was a number two for a long time at Ferrari, and he got shoved down. I would say shoved down, but I mean Alfa's, they're right there in the points behind Red Bull and Renault. So yeah, I mean, Kimi's doing wonders. I mean, put that man in a Mercedes and who knows what's going to happen. But if there's a seat up for grabs on a top team at Ferrari, the same way Leclerc came up through, Leclerc raced for Sauber last year, who is now the Alfa Romeo team, same team with Giovinazzi and Raikkonen. So I think first you'll see Mick Schumacher in the F1 car with the Alfa Romeo racing team. And I think maybe that seat at that point would probably be Kimi Raikkonen's seat in the F1, in the Alfa Romeo team. So you might see a Schumacher, Giovinazzi, Alfa Romeo racing team. And then if he does well, a season after that, you might see him in a Ferrari with Leclerc. I think that's definitely a possibility. Or, you know, Gasly in Honda. I mean, well, they'll have Albon. Everyone kind of has their funnel, you know, and their guys they bring up through their driving academy. So yeah, naturally in the normal scope of things, we'll see him in an Alpha in 2021 and we could see him in a Ferrari in 2022, but yeah.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Well, so reading through these other questions, we were a little late. These were really should answer these pre China and pre Texas. So,
well, we had, you know, a 2 week gap and we're going to have another 2 week gap, unfortunately, you know, between races here and I think 3 weeks from MotoGP.
Yeah. Yeah, so, it's, I hate that, but so we'll try to, we'll try to hit this better next time. But yeah, thanks Change for those questions. Well, yeah, so great racing today. If you haven't watched, if you need a spot to go watch these and you don't know how to, check out Reddit Motorsport Replays. There's typically one for whatever you're trying to watch, and it's pretty good. So I know it can be difficult. Well, really ESPN Now, they do show F1, but a lot of times, like, so you have to catch it or you have to have a subscription to something. So yeah, check out Reddit. It's
yeah, if you're fortunate enough to have a DVR, then it's easy as, just set the timer and check it out whenever you need to. But yeah, Reddit, Motorsports Replays, like Taylor mentioned, and then Motorsports Streams, r/Motorsports Streams. Not that we're promoting,
pirating
no. or streaming illegal content.
Don't do anything illegal.
If you need to watch it in a pinch, that's a really good place to go find these. So use ad blocker. That's just my side recommendation there. One more thing I want to mention, though, before we sign off. Pierre Gasly had a huge gap to Daniel Ricciardo, the best of the rest. Daniel Ricciardo finally comfortable in a Renault.
Good.
Had a good lonely race in seventh place, which I think he's very happy with. He seemed all smiles and just natural, Ricciardo after the race. So Pierre Gasly had like a 28, 30 second gap, and Red Bull figured, hey, why not? The fastest lap right now is sitting with Vettel. Let's go take that point from Ferrari. Let's make their day even worse, right? Because they didn't have a strategy and they couldn't get their stuff together. So they came in at the end of the race, one lap to go, soft tires, out lap, and Pierre Gasly went out and put in the fastest lap of the race and stole a point from Sebastian Vettel. So I thought that was interesting. It's the first time this season that we've seen the fastest lap 1 point award actually become, somebody who's not on the podium or not in the 1-2. So it actually went to a tertiary team, sitting down there. So that was interesting to see. It had some fun. You saw Hamilton at the end of the race asking questions, who has the fastest lap? What's going on with Bottas? Like, they were joking about it. Was he going to ask about stock prices next? He was just literally hanging out, just doing his thing at the front. They're just so
who won the Masters? He's like, it's who won the Masters?
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah. Oh, okay, cool. Like, it's like that scene from in Talladega where you see, the French driver drinking his tea while he's chasing. Like, we've all seen that movie,
Talladega Nights. Yeah,
yeah, where he's just like hanging out. Yeah, it's crazy how well they can perform. But it is what it is. Hopefully Mercedes doesn't just win the next race. But the next race is in Azerbaijan, Castle, on the racetrack. I would bet a lot of money that we will see an actual safety car. Not a virtual safety car. A, Mercedes SLS AMG safety car out in front of the pack. Because there's no runoff. It's just walls. When you get tied up, especially on lap one, we were fortunate enough in this race. It took until turn six until, Danny Kvyat had a McLaren sandwich and got pushed into one another. So, yeah, next race will be a lot more. It's going to be less strategy as far as like, it's going to be a one stopper, but it's going to be a mess, I think. So, yeah. Baku Azerbaijan will be fun. It'll be fun.
Right on, man. Well, hey, good talking to you. Everybody, thanks for listening. You know what to do. Subscribe, leave a comment, review, whatever it is. We appreciate it. So until next time, cheers.
Until next time. Out.